Good morning to all of you. First case this morning is Ohio Apartment Association and Greenwich Apartments and others against William Wilkins, Tax Commissioner. Mr. Wallach.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please? Your Honors, it is time for this court to correct a 30-year-old mistake. In State X Rel Swetland v. Kinney, otherwise known as Park 5, this court permitted the legislature to ignore the clear requirement of Article 12, Section 2 of the Ohio Constitution that land and improvements thereon shall be taxed by uniform rule according to value. This evasion was accomplished by a deliberate distortion of the term exemption. As used in Article 12 and as used in ordinary English, an exemption is an immunity from a general burden, tax, or charge. The question then becomes, what did the term partial immunity mean as it was used in the Park 5 decision and as it appears in Ohio Revised Code Section 319.302? As used in the City of Dayton versus Cloud decision by this court, a partial immunity was just that, that is, an immunity applied to part of property. That part can be part separated geographically, or it can be part separated in some other way, as it was in the Cloud case, where the partial immunity was applied to an increase in value. However, what partial immunity does not mean and cannot mean under Article 12 is non-uniform taxation rates, and that is precisely what this court permitted in Park 5 and needs to correct today. To restore the integrity of Article 12, Section 2 in the Ohio Constitution, this court needs to overrule Park 5, adopt the reasoning that was set forth by the three-justice dissent in that case, and find that Ohio Administrative Code Rule 5703-2518 is contrary to the requirements of the Ohio Constitution and therefore unreasonable and invalid.
Mr. Counsel. Wallach, the argument is made that your position is really a denial of an equal protection constitutional claim and should have been brought as a declaratory judgment rather than in this fashion.
Well, Your Honor, we could have brought this action as a declaratory judgment. And we chose not to. That was certainly a path that was available to us, I agree. And we are making an equal protection claim as well as a secondary claim here, although our primary claim is indeed the Article 12, Section 2 invalidity of the rule that's been adopted by the tax commissioner. But I certainly concede we could have brought this as well as a declaratory judgment action.
But the Board of Tax Appeals doesn't have authority to consider a constitutional claim, does it?
It does not have the authority to decide that an underlying statute is unconstitutional. And this issue was already addressed by this court in ruling on the commissioner's motion to dismiss. And the court held in that decision that this was an alternative route that was available. That also was true in the Roosevelt Properties case. The court did the same thing and permitted an appeal to be taken from a Board of Tax Appeals decision, even though the board had no authority itself to find the matter unconstitutional. What the board was able to do in that case and in this case was to develop a record for presentation to this court, which is particularly important on the equal protection claim, which we are also making.
All right. Thank you.
Counsel, when you mentioned the overruling of Park 5, the question would be, because your arguments are constitutional, what is your position with respect to the Westfield versus Galatas test regarding overruling precedent?
Your Honor, is that the case in which it sets a minimum number of justices who have to rule on overruling it?
Well, Westfield versus Galatas.
Yes.
Are you familiar with that case?
No, I'm not. Unless that's the case I'm trying to think of.
Then you have not made that argument whatsoever in this particular case.
No.
Counsel, what are the implications of your argument? If the court were to accept your argument, does that mean that the homestead exemption then gets wiped out, does that mean the 10% rollback for residential property gets wiped out? The 2.5% additional rollback for residential property gets wiped out? What are the implications of what you're arguing?
Your Honor, I think that that's probably correct, that if, as we believe, the Park 5 decision was wrong, then the 2.5% tax reduction factor was not constitutional and needs to be resubmitted to the legislature for hopefully approval in a constitutional form. And I think it also means, as to the 10% rollback that's the subject of this case, that it cannot be constitutionally applied until the legislature repairs it. And so I think, yes, that is in fact the consequence of this, that under Article 12, Section 2 of the Constitution, taxation must be uniform according to value. And neither of those, as currently applied, is in fact uniform.
Well, Counsel, is it uniform within the entire universe of real estate, or is it uniform within real estate that falls into the same category, commercial versus residential versus any other, agricultural, et cetera? Isn't that the interpretation that has been consistently utilized?
Well, Your Honor, the Constitution doesn't make that distinction. The Constitution just says property. To the extent that the legislature has been interested in the past in making such a distinction for some purposes, it has gone to the constitutional amendment route, which is where we get Article 12, Section 2A from, which was, in fact, precisely the proper way to make such a distinction for taxation purposes, which is to amend the Constitution to permit that classification. But that only permitted that classification for one tax factor. It did not apply to any other tax reduction factors or taxes or other tax bills that might come in front of the legislature. So, no, the Constitution simply makes no distinction between commercial and residential property for that purpose. And, in fact, I think it's clear that that is why Article 12, Section 2 was adopted, was precisely to prevent discrimination against commercial property by the legislature. So, no, and indeed, if the legislature thinks that such a distinction ought to be made, then the Constitution needs to be amended to permit it, either in an individual instance, as in Article 12, Section 2A, or a general amendment to Article 12, Section 2. But as the law stands right now, it really does not make any exceptions for that sort of classification. Property taxation must be uniform according to value.
Well, Counsel,
and this Court has so held many times prior to the Park 5 decision. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, I guess I'm back to where Justice O'Donnell is, and perhaps you can't get there with what you've proposed. It would seem to me your strongest argument is, and following up on what Justice O'Connor asked also, that the rollback, or I guess that's what you call it, the 10% reduction, should be uniform with respect to all residential property. Isn't that your strongest argument? And that's not the argument you're making.
Well, Your Honor, that's our equal protection argument, I guess, is that there is no grounds for distinguishing, as this statute and the resulting rule distinguish,
right,
between properties with three units and properties with four units.
But you're not attacking the statute.
Well, we aren't in a position to directly attack the statute, but I think it's clear, Your Honor, that the rationale behind the rule is precisely the rationale behind the statute, and if this Court invalidates the rule, the statute will necessarily be invalid.
I'm troubled by the same thing that others seem to be troubled by, and that is you've handcuffed us in the way you've presented this to us. If you had it here with an attack on the statute, it would seem to me an equal protection argument might be pretty persuasive.
Well, Your Honor, we are making such an argument. That is our second argument in the case. Our second assignment of error is that the classification created by the rule violates equal protection.
But the rule simply follows the statute, doesn't it?
It largely follows the statute. That is correct.
And that's what the legislature told them to do.
That's correct.
Right?
Yes. But so, if it's unconstitutional, Your Honor, as this Court has already ruled in denying the Commissioner's motion to dismiss, if it's an unconstitutional rule, the fact that it follows the statute won't save it. And we believe that it is unconstitutional. And indeed, we do think there is an equal protection problem. And an interesting contrast, I think, is between the distinction made in this case between all commercial property, including apartments with four or more units, and all residential property, including apartments with three units or less, is that in the Roosevelt Properties case, where a very similar but not identical distinction was upheld under an equal protection challenge by this Court, there was an additional requirement, that is that the property that is treated as residential had to be owner-occupied. And that additional requirement was not added by the legislature in this case. So there is a distinction on the equal protection issue here between the Roosevelt Properties case and this case.
Counsel, I want to take you now to Justice Cupp's question. If we were to attack this on the equal protection mm-hmm. approach and by your argument there,
yes.
and we can only deal with the rule and not the statute in the way you've postured this case in front of us, is it not possible to have the end result, the practical result, be that everybody gets the 10% reduction, including your client, instead of that nobody gets it? Because your answer to Justice Cupp was the answer is nobody gets it.
Well, and, Your Honor, to the extent that the Court agrees with us that Article 12, Section 2 of the Constitution means what it says and needs to be enforced, my answer to Justice Cupp stands. But your question is somewhat different, and that is if the Court were to invalidate this rule on equal protection grounds only, would the result be the same? And I think the answer is it would be somewhat different. Because if the answer is that this is invalid on equal protection grounds but not under Article 12, Section 2, then the Court would not be required to address the 2.5% issue at all or to overrule Park 5. And in this case, by invalidating the rule, the Commissioner would presumably be in a position to adopt new rules that didn't discriminate between classes of residential property. So certainly, Your Honor's point is correct, that if this Court were to act only on equal protection grounds and leave aside the constitutional issue—
That would seem to be a more reasonable outcome, wouldn't it?
And, Your Honor, I don't disagree that the outcome might be easier to live with for the legislature and for the administration and for everybody else, but that I still believe rather strongly that constitutionally Article 12, Section 2 has been impinged upon by the Park 5 decision and that this Court needs to correct that as a matter of jurisprudence.
Mr. Wallach, with respect to the equal protection argument, your clients are owners. How do they have standing to assert the claims that really are those of the renters?
Well, Your Honor, the owners of the property are the ones who are assessed for the tax. Whether they are able to pass that tax along through their rent to their tenants is a second question. But there's no question that the owners of the property are the ones who receive the tax bill, and I think that gives them standing to complain about the tax. What their ability is to pass that along, it seems to me to be a secondary issue. And I don't think there's been any serious question in this litigation about their standing to raise this issue. Heaven knows there were enough procedural issues raised below but in this Court, but that hasn't been one of them.
Mr. Wallach, did your client enjoy the rollback prior to the amendment or the enactment of 319, 302?
I think they thought it was terrific. Yeah, Your Honor, like all other property owners in
Everybody
Ohio.
Everybody liked it. And your problem is that when the commercial activity tax, when the CAT was enacted, the amendments were made, and any unit owner of four or more units lost the 10% rollback, and that's really what got us here.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
And is it your view that that was only done through the regulation of the tax commissioner, or was that done by the General Assembly in the enactment of 319?
It took both of them. It took the legislature enacting the law, and it took the tax commissioner adopting the regulation. The law did not instantly go into effect without the regulation. So it needed both.
So your problem is with the constitutionality of 319 in terms of equal protection.
Ultimately,
which is really
no
a declaratory judgment action that's not before us.
Your Honor, I absolutely agree. The ultimate source of the problem here is the action of the legislature, and I'm not suggesting that
secondarily, it's the regulation put into place by the tax commissioner in excluding that. Why wouldn't that be a collateral attack on the CAT tax? Or is it?
Your Honor, our attack in this case is on the regulation. The fact that the implication of that decision will also speak to the statute is unquestionable, but I don't believe it turns it into an impermissible collateral attack. The regulation is in effect and is subject to attack, and that's what we've chosen to attack here as the most reasonable route to obtain review of that by this court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallach.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Pratt.
Chief Justice Brown, and may it please the court, I believe the court's inquiry centers on what the tax commissioner has proposed to the court as a cross appeal to the court, and that was the question of whether or not the true issue that the appellants seek here is properly before the court. They literally, in their briefs, ask for the court to order the tax commissioner to apply the rollback to all real property in accordance with a constitutional mandate and as applied prior to the rule's enactment. That is relief that cannot be afforded in these proceedings. As the court has noted, a rule review proceeding is a very narrow statutory proceeding. And because we are on appeal from a very narrow statutory proceeding, the court's own authority is constricted by the authority of the statute itself.
Counsel, do you agree with the taxpayer's attorney that absent the rule, nothing would happen?
I disagree strongly with their representation to the court. Revised Code Section 319.302 is self-executing. Without the rule whatsoever, the tax commissioner would be obligated to apply the same classification as currently being applied. Rule 18 is a direct restatement of the statute and therefore provides absolutely no independent authority for anything with respect to the administration of the 10% tax rollback. So they are in the wrong forum.
Well, what does the county auditor respond to? Does the county auditor respond to a rule, or does the county auditor act simply with the enactment of a statute?
I believe that all state officials and local officials are obligated to follow the tenets of a statute, regardless of whether or not there's a rule in place. Now, there is a separate rule, which is Rule 10, which is a rule that's been in place long before the enactment of the 10% rollback that the county auditors have been following with respect to the classification of property. But again, that is a rule that is not driven by the 10% rollback.
So the county auditor, when they do all of the things that they do before they send out a bill to a taxpayer, they look at the rules, not the statute.
They look at both, Your Honor, because they are obligated to follow both. And
well, what do we do with a rule that we believe violates equal protection, if we believe that?
All the court can do in this instance is to do what the BTA was authorized to do in the event that they had authority over constitutional issues, and that is simply to direct the tax commissioner to repeal the offending rule. That is the limitation. Unlike a declaratory judgment action where the court...
So we could do that. We could say we think this rule violates equal protection, so repeal it.
That's correct. But the statute, again, which is self-executing, would remain in place, and the tax commissioner, until such time as the court would rule with respect to the statute, would be obligated to continue to follow the statute.
I'm interested in what you believe we have the authority to do within the confines of this case.
And that would be it, Your Honor, to order the repeal of the rule.
If we were to agree with your opponent on the equal protection argument and get past the jurisdictional hurdles, do you agree that the entire rollback for everybody would be gone?
I think that there are two options, since the legislature could eliminate the rollback with respect to everyone, and I think that would probably be the most appropriate direction to go. The legislature, of course, could restore the tax breaks for the commercial.
But I'm more interested in what happens in the interim. Does it mean that between now, between our decision and when the legislature would choose to act again, that the rollback is gone for everybody in the interim? Because that's what he seems to be assessing.
But not with respect to the statute, and therefore the rollback would not be gone.
If we accept that we can't deal with the statute.
That's correct, and I believe they conceded that.
But do you agree with him that if we find that even the rule and the statute are unconstitutional, there's a period of no rollback for anybody, according to his
assertion? That would appear to be the result, Your Honor, which would obviously impact a whole bunch of people. People, by the way, that are not parties to this action, which is another reason why we think it's inappropriate. If it were a declaratory judgment action, for example, the interests of those folks who would actually lose the property tax break would obviously be a necessary component of the disposition of that case.
Counsel, I don't understand your argument. You just said that if we knocked out the rule, the statute still controls.
That's correct.
All right. So if the statute still controls, it provides a 10% rollback plus a 2.5% for homesteaders of a certain age. That 2.5%, I'm not that familiar with.
Correct. That would be the direct result, Your Honor. But I believe the question that was posited was if the court actually struck down the statute as well.
Correct. That was my question.
Oh.
There actually is,
now,
by the way.
Now, why? I'm also interested in, you said you thought the better course for the General Assembly would be to repeal the 10% rollback for everybody if we struck the rule.
I think
why would that be?
My statement was if the statute also was struck down, then the result would be there would be no rollback for anyone.
Yeah, but before that, you said you thought the better course, if the General Assembly had to do something, you thought the better course of action would be for them to repeal the rollback for
everybody.
Right,
and I apologize if I was speculating for the General Assembly, and I don't take that particular task on.
Well, that would be a pretty big move.
Exactly.
Right.
I think
others
that's
have
totally
tried
up
it,
for
though.
Their discretion.
Others have tried it.
There actually is. In following up on this thought, an administrative remedy where the statute could have been presented to the court, and that would be through a challenge to an assessment through the Board of Revision on up through the BTA and ultimately to the court. There actually is a specific statute that allows taxpayers to challenge classifications, which would have been a ready remedy to bring this issue to the
court.
Well,
let me take you to the equal protection argument for the – I mean, I'm not pleased with the limited posture that we have this case in. It seems to me to be a foolish way to present this, but that's the way the taxpayers have chosen to present it. But let me take you to the equal protection argument. As to the rule, why is that rule not a violation of equal protection? What is the rational basis – for the classification?
I would first note, Your Honor, that the court has in fact had that issue twice before it and found it to be a valid exercise of equal protection. But specifically, there are many reasons. First of all,
we found it to be not a violation of equal protection to segregate out 1, 2, and 3 family residences from 4 and above?
Yes, you have, Your Honor, in Roosevelt Properties. And I submit that the appellants certainly have not established their burden under U.S. v. Madden to negate every conceivable basis for that distinction. The record itself demonstrates several reasons for the distinction, one of which is that the ratio of homeowners in 1, 2, and 3 units versus everyone else is significantly higher. It flattens out almost to zero once we get above 3 units. And certainly governments have always favored the ownership of homes as a valid and realistic goal in tax policy. Then secondly, what we have is evidence in the record that there is a distinct and marked difference between the impact of inflation on those 1, 2, and 3 units versus everyone else. It's a much higher inflationary impact, which again is a valid reason for the distinction. Third,
well, this distinction is not just in taxation, is it? It's in the zoning laws commonly found. It's in the building codes. It's a commonly found distinction. So this is not really unusual or limited to the field of taxation, is it?
It certainly isn't, Your Honor. And I would point out that clearly we have a distinction, as the Court alluded to during Mr. Wallach's presentation. There's a distinction in the application of other tax provisions to these two classes of property owners. The commercial property owners have obtained the advantage of the CAT. Homeowners don't.
What do you mean, the advantage of the CAT?
Because the previous personal property tax and franchise taxes that would be ordinarily levied on those commercial property owners and not on homeowners were removed. In response, a much more generous, lenient tax, the CAT, was imposed on those commercial property owners.
So the homeowner pays a personal property tax on their furniture and refrigerator and stove and all of those things?
Homeowner doesn't.
What?
Personal property tax was not applicable to individual ownership of those kinds of items. It's a business tax. And there's where the line is drawn between the 1, 2, and 3, which, again, have a predominant occupancy of homeowners versus the commercial property owners that are almost 100% of the other class.
Well, what's the percentage on the three-family?
18%. It drops off to zero at that point in time. And the Court has told us on numerous occasions
18% of three-family
are owned by or occupied by their owner.
Owners, okay.
The Court has told us on numerous occasions there's no iron rule of equality on this and that we do not have to be fine in the constitutional distinctions. Not only has this Court said this, but the courts of 4 other states that have had this very issue have also agreed that drawing a line between 3 and 4 is a constitutionally sound distinction.
Mr. Pratt, a few moments ago you mentioned the CAT tax and the switch to the CAT tax as reducing the burden on the commercial property owners.
Yes, sir.
And that might provide a policy basis why taking away the rollback here might be appropriate.
Correct,
are you suggesting that that's a basis for the Court to uphold this? Is that also a legal basis?
I think
the Court can uphold the elimination of the rollback?
I think within the context of a rational basis for classifications, one can look at the burdens between each of the classes in a tax context and find that that's still another rational basis for why there's different treatment with respect to real property taxes.
Okay.
Well, counsel, wouldn't the true fact be that the CAT tax and the reduction, the elimination of the personal property tax benefited other taxpayers principally and not owners of multifamily residential properties? They weren't paying hardly any personal property tax to begin with. That was not part of their tax burden. And many of them are partnerships and limited partnerships, so they weren't paying the corporate franchise tax either. So they got a new tax, the CAT tax.
But a significant amount.
And they lost
a
significant 10%, they got a 10% kick up in their real estate taxes.
I think a significant amount of them were, Your Honor, and certainly they were paying personal property taxes.
Mr. Pratt, before you sit down, your cross appeal is
that the BTA had no jurisdiction to consider the constitutional issue. Did I understand that correctly?
Our position, Your Honor, which was partially addressed in the court's response to our motion to dismiss, was that, yes, once it was made clear that the only issue being raised to the BTA was a constitutional issue, it's our belief the BTA should not have accepted jurisdiction over the matter because they themselves do not have the ability to address constitutional issues.
And if we agree with that position, what would be the resolution of this case from your standpoint?
We believe the case should have been properly dismissed, Your Honor, because what the proceeding is in reality a quasi-legislative proceeding that deals, as the Court has noted, solely with the continued viability of a rule, not to an assessment and not to any grander issues. Court, in its motion to dismiss, distinguished this proceeding from Zangerle v. Evott. It did not address the other decision that we prominently featured in our motion, which is Fortner v. Thomas. Unlike the Zangerle v. Evott situation, Fortner did involve a scenario where the body reviewing the rule was a separate body from the body enacting the rule. In that case, it was the difference between an administrative agency and the Court of Common Pleas, which served as the rule review body. We think the fact that the Court also found in that situation that it was quasi-legislative would support our position.
And so you want us to simply dismiss this case?
We feel that's the appropriate remedy.
And then that means that this gets back to Common Pleas Court for a declaratory judgment on the constitutionality of the statute, and we work ourselves all the way back up.
Or the alternative, again, as we indicated earlier, would be to contest the matter through the proper administrative remedy in contesting an individual assessment.
Thank you.
And in conclusion, I would simply request the Court to affirm the constitutionality of these rules. We believe it's supported both under the uniformity clause, as the appellants candidly acknowledge. The Court has already addressed this issue under uniformity and found it to pass constitutional muster. We believe the Court has also previously addressed the equal protection issue. We're talking about 45 years of judicial jurisprudence here that the appellants seek to overturn. We don't think they've met their burden of establishing that. Clearly, they have not shown beyond a reasonable doubt that the two rules are unconstitutional.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very
Pratt.
Much.
Mr. Wallach, 1 minute.
I don't know if the Court is as struck as I am by the fact that the first time that counsel for the Commissioner addressed the question of compliance with Article 12, Section 2 was after his time had run out. That's an issue that there's been virtually no briefing supplied by the Commissioner on in opposition to our analysis and virtually no argument given to this Court today. Article 12, Section 2 is plain. It has been violated for 30 years under the Park 5 decision, and that needs to be corrected. There's no question that will cause some administrative issues as the Tax Commissioner tries to decide how to proceed under a statute that is implicitly unconstitutional and rules that have been held specifically unconstitutional. But that does not change the fact that the Court needs to uphold the integrity of the Constitution and the Uniformity Clause. And I say the lack of any serious opposition to that position by the Commissioner in argument today ought to be instructive. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallach.